Hi, my name is Peter Moe and I'm from Tourism Ireland's Nordic office in Copenhagen. Today we will be talking about the Cradle of Ireland's History and Culture, a UNESCO World Heritage Site, Brut na Boinne. We have the perfect person with us here to enlighten us on this, Claire Tuffy from the Office of Public Works, who works at the Brut na Boinne Visitor Centre. Now Claire, you're very welcome to our show here today.
Thank you very much, lovely to meet you.
Likewise. Would you mind telling our listeners what Brut na Boinne is?
Brut na Boinne is, as you mentioned, a World Heritage Site. It's located near the east coast of Ireland, within a bend of the River Boyne. And it is one of the richest archaeological landscapes in Europe. It is best known for the outstanding passage tombs of Newgrange, Knowth and Douth. But there are lots of other monuments within this area too. And it was made a World Heritage Site in 1993. And the reasons it was made a World Heritage Site was because of the passage tombs, but also because of the collection of megalithic art on the monuments and the continuity of use through so many thousands of years from earliest times right down to the present day.
Okay, interesting. So I have already a couple of questions. What is a passage tomb?
Passage tomb is just as it sounds. It's a tomb, which is the chamber in which the usually cremated remains of the dead were placed, is accessed by a long, narrow passage. So when you come to Newgrange, you see this huge monument, 80 metres in diameter. But the passage and chamber are actually quite tight inside. Mm-hmm. So it's a very narrow passage leading into quite a sizable chamber. The idea is that, I suppose, 5,000 years ago when they were built, wow, is that very few people would actually have gotten into the tomb. And the outside is huge and embellished and very grandiose. And that is to impress all the people who would have gathered for these great rituals.
And do we know anything about the rituals that were done there?
No, we don't know anything about the rituals. I mean, we imagine what might have gone on, but 5,000 years is a long time ago.
Definitely.
Now, you know, many people speculate as to the type of rituals. I imagine it would have been kind of like modern day ceremonies, where you had a kind of an exclusive, powerful group who were very solemn, and then the rest of us just turned up to see what was happening, you know, so that there would have been an element of celebration and meeting people and excitement about going to a big occasion. But I can imagine that the ordinary people like you and I, we were way down the back.
Probably. I mean, I can't argue there. So you mentioned it's 5,000 years. So how has it figured through Irish history, and what's the relevance for Irish history, I guess?
We didn't know until the 1960s, with the coming of radiocarbon dating, that it was 5,000 years old.
Okay.
We had no idea. Like, I mean, even when Professor O'Kelly started excavation in 1962, at that stage, it was believed to be about 4,000 years old. And this was the first monument in Ireland to actually be dated by radiocarbon dating. It was a newfangled science at the time. And it changed everything. It changed all the history books here in Ireland, but all over Europe, because it was always thought that civilization began in, you know, Central Europe and eventually got out to here on the edge of the Atlantic. But with the date of 3200 BC, it turned everything on its head. So we had these fantastic monuments built before the pyramids were built, long before Stonehenge was built. And it's part of an Atlantic tradition. It's not just in Ireland that we have passage tombs. We have passage tombs all along the coast, like we have them in Denmark and we have them in southern Sweden and we have them in France and Spain and Portugal and Great Britain. But ours are the biggest and the best. So we really outdid ourselves. So whatever was going on here 5,000 years ago, they were very ambitious, very powerful, very cohesive society.
Fair enough. But were the tombs always known, or was it something that was only... when were they discovered? Has it always figured in Irish history, or was it?
No, it would have. They always figured in Irish mythology, okay. Not so much in history. the monument of Newgrange was rediscovered in 1699. Now, at that stage, you know, they were taking stones away from the entrance. They accidentally found the entrance to the tomb then. But the monument itself had featured in all of the great sagas right throughout the ages. So there was a lot of superstition and mythology associated with them. Because, I mean, they were so old and so impressive and such, and built on such a huge scale that as successive peoples came to Ireland and came to the Boyne Valley, they all thought, as colonists always do, the people who are here, they're not up to much, they couldn't possibly have built it. So they gave credit to the building of the monuments to deities, people with extraordinary power. But in fact, they were ordinary people with extraordinary skills.
Yeah.
But we didn't acknowledge that until, I suppose, the late 20th century.
Yeah, I can see how something that is very grand, very big is could have been not that easy to fathom.
Yeah, it's so extraordinary. Like, I mean, the monuments are impressive now. When our modern day visitors come to Newgrange or Nowth or Douth, they just stand and in awe of the monuments just for the sheer drama and size of them. Like, it's only when you stand beside the monuments that you realize how big they are. Mm. So you can imagine coming up the River Boyne in a little boat 5,000 years ago, or even 4,000 years ago, and just seeing these monuments. Obviously, you're not going to think they were made by ordinary people, that you could also build one. They were made by an extraordinary society, which was fairly short-lived and then passed on into different culture.
And are Nowth, Douth and Newgrange all beside each other?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I suppose they're about a kilometre apart from each other.
Okay.
They're all built within this bend of the River Boyne. So they're intervisible. Mm-hmm. And they're, you see, the way that the geography is, there's a big loop in the River Boyne. And then within the bend of the river, there are three hills. And on top of each of the hills, then there is this massive monument.
To make them extra visible.
Yeah, to make them extra visible, especially from the river. And the river wraps itself around it. The river itself was associated with a goddess called Bowen. So it's all interwoven into the mythology, and it was a place naturally set apart.
Fair enough. What makes it a UNESCO World Heritage Site?
The fact that we have the most impressive passage tombs anywhere in Europe, the size and scale of them is unrivaled. We have the largest collection of megalithic art from anywhere in Europe. The entire collection of other European megalithic art is smaller than what we have here. So we have more art here than anywhere else.
Combined.
All the rest of the countries combined, yes.
Okay.
And then, as I mentioned earlier, it's the continuity of use. Hmm. So when the passage tomb builders, when their time passed and new people came to the Boyne Valley, they stopped building passage tombs, but they continued to build monuments on a huge scale. We have these huge circular enclosures called henge monuments, and they run right along by the River Boyne. And they were as impressive in their day too as the passage tombs, like huge circular enclosures, perfectly geometric designed, all made of wood. And you might remember in 2018, there was great excitement because a new one was discovered from crop marks. Two local photographers were flying drones in the really dry summer of 2018. And they're revealed, after all those years, perfectly outlined in a crop, was this huge monument, which made international news.
Then what uses has Bruna Boyne had through the ages then?
Well, it was always a sacred place, a ritual place, a place for gathering, a place to impress, a place of powerful people. So people would have come from all over Ireland and probably from further afield, even in the Neolithic, in the Stone Age, to come here. Oh. It was like the top of all of the Neolithic sites right over Western Europe. The only place that comes close for grandeur is the Orkney Islands.
Okay. So also, let's put it like this, a secluded area.
Yeah. Well, we'd be more mainstream now than Orkney, but it's incredible the similarities between the culture in Orkney and that in the Boyne Valley. They're very, very similar. Two very powerful communities thriving around 5,000 years ago.
Which is impressive. I mean, that's so long ago.
It is, yeah.
So down to a more practical question here. Mm-hmm. How do you visit the site, and can you actually get inside the mound? Is it just...
Yeah, you can actually go into the chamber at Newgrange. Oh. And as we always joke here, we even let you back out, which isn't often an option when you're visiting a tomb, you know.
No. Yeah.
So since 1997, mm-hmm. when this visitor centre where I'm speaking to you from was built, all access to Newgrange and Knowth is through the visitor centre. Okay. So you book your ticket online so that you can guarantee that you have your place booked long before you visit Ireland. So you go to heritageireland.ie and you book your ticket. Then you turn up at the visitor centre here where I am with your ticket. And then you leave your car in the car park, and then you get a shuttle bus over to the monuments. And you go to Knowth first. And then you're brought to Newgrange. At Newgrange, you're brought inside the chamber and then brought back here to the visitor centre. The whole idea of the design of the way we visitors experience the monuments is to be sustainable so that, you know, we can manage the number of visitors that are going to the monuments at all time, because we have to remember they're 5,000 years old. If something happens to them, we can't build another one.
No.
We also wanted to present the sites as they may have been in the past, as part of a rural landscape. So by having all of the cars and all of the buses here at the visitor centre, by the time you get to the monument, there is no traffic. All you can hear is the sounds of nature and the birds and the animals and the fields and the farmers going up and down.
It's a more immersive experience then.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And so that was the whole idea. And then here at the visitor centre, then we have, when you come back to the visitor centre, we have, you know, all the facilities that visitors expect, like the tea rooms and the shop. And we have a fantastic exhibition, which is worth seeing if you never saw the monuments, because it's completely immersive experience too, where you can go back into the past. And we have a soundtrack in our visitor centre where you can actually hear the animals and the birds that would have lived in Ireland in the Neolithic. And we also have a replica of the chamber at Newgrange here in the visitor centre. So even if you couldn't get to see the monuments for some reason, maybe we'd be sold out, or maybe it was too much of a time commitment, or maybe, you know, there's lots of different reasons.
Claustrophobia,
yeah. You can still come here to the visitor centre and visit all of the exhibition. So, we're delighted with the way we're set up. We think we're an example of good practice and how to present prehistoric monuments, and we're recognized as such.
Definitely. I mean, it sounds a good immersive way to get a more wholly comprehensive experience.
Yeah. And not only that, but even when the visitor center was being built in the 90s, they were very farsighted, the people who designed it, and all of the plants that were planted in our grounds here and in the car park are only plants that would have grown in Ireland in the Neolithic, right?
So all native plants.
Yeah, and we have a real rich wildlife environment, but also we have information panels that show our visitors how the people in the Stone Age would have used those plants in the past.
Oh, okay. So you get like more expanded experience than just... I'm saying just,
it's not
but
just
not really.
Going into the tomb. It's a whole experience where you can immerse yourself and just think about what it would have been like to live in Ireland in the Stone Age. And even the fences that we build here at the visitor centre are wattle fences. We don't use...
So that is...
So they're like...
Tipped
you know,
over fenced where you kind of...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where you put down the wooden stakes and then you wind the hazels or the willow in between. Yeah. It's very, very effective, but it's also very good for nature because the bugs love it. So, we're very fortunate. We work in a beautiful place.
It sounds like it. Very much sounds like it. I haven't been yet.
Oh, right. Oh, well, you'll have to put it on your list.
I definitely will. But unfortunately, I guess COVID has put a stop to many of the things on my list.
But people are moving again.
People are moving up again, and it's definitely on my list.
Good.
Do you have any tours, or is it all self-guided?
Oh, no. All access to the monuments is with guided tours. Part of our role as guide information officers with the Office of Public Works is to protect the monuments, as well as encourage people to learn about the monuments. So we found it was very striking during different stages of lockdowns when people were doing self-guiding. We really missed talking to the visitors, but the visitors really missed us talking to them too and explaining things because, you know yourself, we have the exhibition here, which is very in-depth and a lot of information, but you get your head turned with all the wildlife going across to the bus stop. Then you're on the bus and you're looking out the window and you're looking at houses and you're looking at how people live. And then you get to the monument and you kind of go, oh, I've forgotten what they said about all of this. So it's great to meet a guide.
You kind of don't know where to start and stop as well.
Yeah. So the guide meets you at Knowth and brings you round and shows you the highlights of the monument and talks about the art. And then we have a room at Knowth, which is only recently opened, which is dedicated to the megalithic art. And then you get back on the bus and you go to Newgrange. And then again, a guide meets you and brings you into the chamber and explains exactly what's happening. And then the feedback from our visitors has really positive. And it's quite a long visit. It takes nearly 3 hours to see the exhibition, Knowth and Newgrange. And we ask visitors, how did you feel it was time-wise? And inevitably they say, you know, I could have spent longer. Because you're moving all the time and you're looking at different things and everything's so big and bold and dramatic that you kind of keep, you want more, you know, you kind of get addicted to this wow factor.
I have to say, if that's the experience that you get from going there, then, I mean, you have a good setup.
Absolutely.
So I have another question. What does Brúna Boine mean?
It means palace or mansion of the Boyne.
Oh.
Palaces, of course, are the monuments. And they're called palaces because in the mythology, they were the dwelling places of the deities. And Newgrange was associated with the greatest of the Celtic deities, the Dog the Moor, and his son Angus, who would have been the Irish equivalent of the god of light and love and all things beautiful. So they were called, in the old Irish stories, they were called palaces or mansions because they were associated with the deities. They lived in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you mentioned sagas quite a bit, or mythology, I should say. Any myth to read up on before visiting?
Well, would you like a bit of romance?
I guess, yeah, why not?
Okay. Well, I mentioned Angus, the god of light and love. Well, Angus, every night for months and months and months, he dreamed of a beautiful woman. She came to him in the dream, but he didn't know who she was. She kind of faded away as he woke up. So he knew that he had to find her. So he sent all of the men of Ireland and the women of Ireland. Everybody was out searching for this elusive woman. And eventually he was told that she had disguised herself as a swan. Right?
Okay.
And he was told that if he could recognize her in swan form, that he would be able to marry her. So this is a bit of a dilemma. So he turned himself into a swan. And when he turned himself into the swan, he recognized her. And they flew back to here, to Brúna Boine, where they lived happily ever after. But the extraordinary thing about that story is that she lived part of the year as a swan and part of the year as a beautiful woman. They both did after they got married. So you had half swan, half human. it's a mythology. You have to keep up. But the extraordinary thing is that to this day, we have the below Newgrange, we have every winter a flock of Hooper swans that winter along the Boyne. They come here from Iceland. They spend the winter here, and come the springtime, they fly off. So the no doubt those swans were coming here thousands and thousands of years ago. And they were so mysterious about they arrived and then they departed, that they wove the swans into the story of the monuments.
Well, that's a lovely connection. That's a lovely, tangible way of simply having the myth and then having the swans come in.
Yeah. And on a winter's morning, when we're waiting for the sun to rise at winter solstice, and the swans fly over Newgrange, and you know the Hooper swans, why they're called Hooper swans. They make a very distinctive noise, hooping noise.
Okay.
And as they fly, they hoop. And it is an extraordinary feeling to be waiting for sunrise at the winter solstice, as they were waiting 5,000 years ago, and have a flyover salute by the swans.
And you mentioned winter solstice. I've seen pictures of Newgrange in winter solstice. What's the meaning of winter solstice for Newgrange? Why is it significant?
The whole monument is orientated towards sunrise at the winter solstice. The whole thing, the massive monuments that we've been talking about, was built around the alignment. No, not all of them, but Newgrange for sure. And Douth is aligned to sunset at the winter solstice. But what makes Newgrange unique, it's not unusual to have prehistoric monuments that are aligned to significant solar events. It's not as common as people think, but it's not absolutely unusual. But what makes Newgrange extraordinary and unique is that it has a specially designed opening for the sun. Every other monument that is orientated to a sunrise or a sunset, the sun just goes in through the doorway like the rest of us, right? It just flows into the interior through the open doorway. But at Newgrange, they designed an opening above the doorway through which the sunlight shines, which Professor O'Kelly, when he discovered it in the 1960s, called the roof box. It's like a box in the roof of the passage. So without the roof box, the sun wouldn't reach the interior.
Okay.
So sunrise at winter solstice, obviously, is a very significant date, because when the sun rises on the shortest day, the longest night is over. So Newgrange is all about light and rebirth and new beginnings. And for a tomb, that's kind of optimistic, really. But it fits in again with the mythology of Angus being associated with light and love and all good things. We had an opportunity during lockdowns that we had never had before. We couldn't invite members of the public into the chamber to see the sun as it rose on the shortest days, because it's quite a small space, and we had various lockdowns for 2020 and 2021. So we decided to block up the doorway as it would have been 5,000 years ago, and just let the sun through the opening over the doorway. And then we set cameras up inside. And for the first time ever, we were able to see the sun as it was designed to be seen by the people who built it. I don't know if you're aware that we webcast the sunrise from the inside the chamber on three mornings in 2020 and again on three mornings in 2021. And we had an extraordinary reaction to it. I mean, people tuned in from all around the world. In 2020, we had glorious sunrises. And one of the mornings, over the three mornings, we had something like over 2 million views.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like being on the Eurovision.
Definitely. I mean, that all sounds incredibly fantastic. Is there, so now that people will be going to Knowth and Douth and Newgrange, do you have any other tips for anyone wanting to experience more ancient history in Ireland?
Oh, yeah, we have lots of ancient places. We have another series of monuments in County Meath, more passage tombs at Loch Crewe, which is in North Meath. And we have a guide service there at the moment in the summer months. And they're on a smaller scale. But if you had never been to Newgrange or Louth, you'd be really impressed with them.
So start with them.
Yeah, but what's extraordinary about Loch Crewe is they're situated on top of the highest hill in County Meath. So from the top of the hill, you can see something like 20 of the 32 counties.
Oh.
The views are extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary. So Loch Crewe is well worth a while visit. And also Tara, the ancient capital of Ireland, which was most famous around the time of Christ, you know, when the high kings were in their heyday. But it has a prehistory, long predating that. And there's a passage tomb on Tara too, which is called the Mound of the Hostages. That's what it's known as now. Again, stories filled the gap when we didn't know what it was all about. And then in County Sligo, we have Carramore and Carrowkeel, which are also passage tombs. And the Sligo landscape is fantastic too. But if you were to come to Ireland and stay just in the Boyne Valley, you would see monuments from every era.
Oh.
From earliest time right up to more modern times. Because you see, the land in the Boyne Valley is very rich. So everybody who ever came to Ireland, whatever monument was in vogue, they were around, they built the best example here. So we have Bruna Boinne with the magnificent monuments of Newgrange, Nowth and Douth. And then as you move into Celtic era, we have Tara. And then we have in the early Christian era, we have the high crosses of Monaster Boyce, which are extraordinary. Then we have the first Cistercian Abbey in the country. We have the second Cistercian Abbey in the country. And we have the largest Anglo-Norman castle at Trim.
Okay.
So you can do the whole history of Ireland by just spending a couple of days in the Boyne Valley.
That's perfect. That's a very good tip.
Mm. No need to go further.
And why should they? I mean, it's everything's there.
Absolutely.
And then a final question. Where can our listeners get in contact to find more about what you have on offer?
Our website is heritageireland.ie. We also have another website if you want to delve a little deeper into the history and prehistory of Bruna Boinne, which is called worldheritageireland.ie.
Worldheritageireland.ie. Perfect. Thank you very much, Claire. This was exactly what I wanted to hear. It was an absolute pleasure to speak with you, and I look forward to hopefully one day soon visiting the Boyne Valley.